Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, the only podcast giving away tickets to this year's BCS National Championship game in Glendale, Arizona. Tom, the Tide is off this week doing their self-scouting, resting, and healing for the home stretch. And during the season, we've done some improvement ourselves. We've modified our format and certainly improved our sound quality thanks to some helpful comments from listeners. But we want to use this bye week as an opportunity to revisit some of the prognostications that we made prior to the season. In our preseason episode, we stepped through 10 items that we want to revisit now and grade not only ourselves, but the performance of the Tide. So why don't we jump into those topics? You ready?
Sure. Let's go.
Fantastic. The first topic that we talked about in the preseason was the need for the Tide, for this version of the Tide, the 0-10 version, to forge a new identity. How would you grade our performance, or how would you evaluate our performance relative to that objective?
I don't think we have seen this team overcome the lack of maturity on this team with all the new starters, with all the new faces. This team does not show me that they're hungry as of yet. Maybe they'll come back from the bye week and look that way. This team does not have the focus. They have not been able to maintain their intensity for four quarters. We've seen a mixed bag. You know, they've come out at the beginning of games and let teams punch them in the mouth. They've come back in the third quarter and done like they did against Tennessee and, you know, played all world. Or we've come out lights out in the first half and then let our foot off the gas in the second half. And so right now, I think Coach Saban said it best when, you know, you got to win every day. And every day you've got to improve and focus on the little things. And hopefully they'll pound this in them, you know, during this bye week. Because right now, these guys just aren't showing the dedication and commitment that they need to be consistent performers.
Rumor has it that this team has not accomplished shit. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. You know, he tried really hard, or the coaching staff tried really hard, to say last year we proved it on the field. This year we have not proved anything. Well, you know, I think you saw in the South Carolina game, which was a tough test on the road after a tough three-week stretch, that they were not able to bring their A game in that game. I do think it was good for them that they lost that game. They're meant to play in the title game, great. You know, they still control their own destiny, and it looks like if they can handle their own business, they'll be in good shape. You can see the youth on this team.
If it was good for them to lose the game, I have to say it wasn't good for me. But I think that this season, especially early in the season, this team took the approach that, hey, this new identity thing is easy. We have it mastered. Look at what the newspaper says. And of course, they stepped off the bus in Columbia, South Carolina, and you know, promptly had that shoved back in their face. And so they're realizing that this new identity thing, there is something to it. I think we have it. This bye week is certainly going to be significant. I think we're going to come out a team possessed the second half, not really half, but the second, the next stanza of the season and perform well. So I think we're landing on, we're not there yet. We haven't completely identified the identity. The team still has some work to do on this one.
Well, I'm hoping they can build off of that second half against Tennessee, but
yes.
Maybe the opponents, as to how the beginning of the season unfolded, didn't help in that matter. Because we started off against a San Jose State. We then go against a Penn State that's is not the team they were last year, right? And you and I both said that they let off the gas, you know, because of respect for Paterno. And then we play a Florida team that is not the Florida teams of the last couple years. And so not only are they reading their newspaper clippings, even though he says they're not, but they're playing Penn States and Floridas of the world that they're dominating. And so they went into South Carolina thinking, man, we are the shit.
Right. No, I agree, and I think that's spot on. Fortunately, we have the opportunity ahead of us for this team to carve out the identity that we would all wish for it. Why don't we move to our next topic? And in the preseason, we spent time talking about the specialists. We were replacing a senior punter, kicker, holder, you name it, return guy in Javi. Where are we with a bunch of new guys?
You know, we expected two scholarship athletes, true freshman scholarship players, to take the job at place kicker and punter. And I guess the first curveball that we have been thrown is walk-on Cody Mandel, you know, taking over the punting duties in week one.
Yep.
And he's actually he's been inconsistent at the beginning of the year. He'd have a 54-yard punt, and then he'd shank a 25-yarder. But I think in the past 3 or 4 weeks, he's gotten more consistent. He's averaging about 40 yards a punt on the year, which is not bad for a walk-on.
I'm not disappointed that the walk-ons are beating out the scholarship players. It's not like it's the walk-on quarterback beating out, you know, the five-star recruit. Sure, they are highly regarded specialists, but not many teams give scholarships to punters and kickers. And so the separation recognized nationally between a walk-on at that position and a scholarship at that position, talent-wise, I think it's a thin margin.
Okay. Well, what do you think about we talked a lot during the season about the Cade Foster and Shelley show. What do you think about what you've seen from the two place kickers?
I think they both performed well, especially, you know, this is their first opportunity to come in and play college football at this level. So I'm impressed with both of their performances. We've talked about short kicker, long kicker, and there's a model that we're trying to follow. But then, you know, Shelley's had an opportunity in each of the last two games to kick what would be considered a long kick, 42 yards. He's missed one. He's made one. I still don't know. Game on the line situation, 35-yard kick. I don't know right now which one would come in to kick it.
I don't either. And it seems like before the last 2 weeks, it seems like Shelley was your guy inside of 40 yards and Cade was your guy outside of 40 yards. One thing I will say for both of them is, you know, they're both at the 75-80% made rate for the year. And, you know, we graduated a late Tiffin that was just in the low 80 percentile range. And so I think they're both doing better than the coaches would have expected to this point. I think they would have expected more misses than we've had so far.
I think we've performed well there, you know, relative to the personnel switchover and even having two guys. What do you think about the kick return situation? You know, Javi, we know that he was probably going to be one of the tougher guys to replace. Julio, who we didn't really want returning kicks at the beginning of the season and punts, he's been back there until recent injury. And then we've had a lot of Trent Richardson returning kickoffs, and now it's Marquise Mays doing the duties with the punt return. What do you think about their performances?
Well, I think it's a shame that Julio got banged up, but for you and I not wanting him to be back there, it seemed like he was the trusted guy that Saban said he's not gonna fumble the punt return.
Right. Protect my football.
He's going to protect the ball even if he doesn't return it.
Right.
Well, him getting banged up, which allowed Marquise Mays to step in there, Marquise Mays, with exception of one or two bad choices, has actually performed pretty well. He's averaging about 17 yards of punt return on his 11 touches so far. And I think in the last couple weeks, he's given us the flash that we've been missing.
Yeah, we talked a few episodes ago. We don't hear anybody, you know, Marquise, like we heard for Javi. But I think he can come in and he's, you know, given a workmanlike effort at this position. And we talked also about some errors that he's making. I just think he's going to get better and stronger at the position as the season moves on. Let's move to our next topic, and that's the defensive backfield. We spent time in several of the early podcasts sort of status checking who the players were and what the rotation was. There was a lot of curiosity, a lot of interest that at the beginning of the season because that was going to be such a young unit relative to the rest of the team. Let me just run down what we're seeing in terms of rotation. We're seeing a lot of Lester and Barron at the safety positions. Kirkpatrick and DeMarcus Milliner have nailed down the corner spots. Daquan Menzie is occupying one of the
star position.
Yeah, the star position, the nickel. He was out last week resting some injury, and so Phelan who apparently has progressed significantly enough that he could play that position, and he certainly played well. We see a little bit of Will Lauer when we go to dime, and that's pretty much the rotation. That's seven guys. We've seen B.J. Scott and John Fulton in
last week's mop-up duty.
Yeah, in mop-up duty. But I think we have the guys, the seven that we're seeing. Any concerns or any thoughts that you have about the secondary?
No. Kind of like we talked about last week, I want B.J. Scott and John Fulton to keep pushing these other guys. I guess I'd start with Daquan Menzie. I mean, he's a JUCO guy coming in, and we were expecting him to have to come in and play serious minutes coming off his Achilles injury.
And he has done that.
He has, and what I was going to say is that he's done everything we could have possibly asked for and more.
Yes.
For him to come in new to Saban's system and come off an injury and the time he missed, etc., I think he's been a really key cog as a junior college maturity guy in that young defensive secondary.
Yeah, Saban doesn't pick many JUCOs, but if you look at the Menzie and you look at Cody, you know, neither of those guys are Kendrick Locks, right?
No, if he's gonna sign a JUCO guy, you're gonna play significant minutes.
Right.
And early in the year, we saw Milner in the mop-up duty, the San Jose State games. We're gonna keep you in the game late. But I thought it was key in that Tennessee game, even though they only came in with like 2 minutes left, that John Fulton jumps up there and deflects a pass, a fade thrown one way. The very next pass, they're like, okay, we'll try this guy, B.J. Scott. Sure. Who is he? And so both of these young guys made a big play.
Yep.
And just a couple plays in the game. And so hopefully we're building some really good depth there.
I agree. And so that's positive moving forward. I think it's safe to say that I'd love to have Robbie Green as part of this rotation. But in terms of missing Robbie Green and Rod Woodson, I think we're safe to say that we're not missing them. And in the fact that this secondary leads the nation in interceptions, or is tied for the lead. Who would have guessed that?
That's true. And the other thing that I guess we need to mention is Will Lowry. I mean, Will Lowry's a guy that, you know, has not played at all as a, you know, any yep. significant minutes except for special teams. And he's come in and kind of locked down the dime, okay, which has allowed us to redshirt the young true freshman. What is it, Jarrett Williams?
Jarrett Williams.
Yeah, so Jarrett Williams hasn't seen the field because of a Will Lowry, and he's got two picks this year.
Right. Jarrett's played just a little bit, but he's had some injury. But you're right. Jarrett was not going to come in ahead of Lowry.
Who would have guessed Lowry had two picks so far this year, though?
Hey. I mean. That's why you play the games, right? Hey, why don't we move to our next topic? And we spent some time in the preseason talking about being multiple. On offense, are we as multiple as we want to be?
You know, I don't think we've seen a whole lot of new wrinkles in this year's team. I mean, we talked about at the beginning of the year in the podcast, we said, okay, McElroy's his second year in the system, his second year working with McElwain. Are they going to give him the reins to make checks at the line of scrimmage and audible into good plays? And I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen a whole lot of that. Sometimes he steps back and he makes some motions to different players, but it doesn't appear to me. I mean, I guess I think of a Peyton Manning and all the crap that he does before a play. I haven't noticed McElroy doing a
whole lot. I don't
think
anybody does it to that degree.
No, that's true. But I mean, have you seen him do a whole lot of audibles? I haven't seen much of it.
No more than...
It's like they haven't given him
less than what I've seen, you know, in years past.
Yeah, it's like they haven't. You would think they would. I mean, he's a mature guy. He's very intelligent. He's a senior. He's a Rhodes Scholar. You think he's got this playbook down, and so you would think they would have given him a little bit more leeway to do some of those things. We also talked about early in the year, we needed this offense to outscore the opponents. We needed, you know, our safety net was going to be the offense with a young defense.
Right.
We have not seen them come out and put other teams on their heels consistently.
Not consistently. And that, you know, I kind of bucket my status on are we as multiple as we want to be. Similar to the new identity, we're an incomplete picture at this time. I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed that we're having a midseason lull. Probably not as pronounced as last year, but we had a lull last year, and we're having a similar lull this year. I'm a little disappointed with that,
you know, specifically we've talked about, you know, seeing Trent and Mark in the backfield at the same time. And we've seen a little bit of that. I think we'll potentially see more as we open up the playbook. We've seen just recently some slants and some crossing routes, and we'd like to see more of those and attacking the ball down the field. That explosive third quarter against Tennessee, I think we saw a little bit of everything that we thought we could be and that we were seeing early in the season against a Penn State and against a
San Jose State
and, you know, Duke. I mean, you know, not much of a competitor there, I guess. But we haven't seen that type of multi-dimension offense in some of the competitive games, you know, not even in Ole Miss necessarily, and certainly not against South Carolina. So I think we have some growing up there to do, and this is a week that hopefully the coaches kind of revisit some of this, and we see this down the home stretch. I think that we will.
No, I hope so. And I can't remember if it was San Jose State or Penn State. I want to say it was Penn State. Yeah, it was Penn State, where we figured out early on in that game that their secondary could not cover our receivers. And so if you recall the play where Kevin Norwood did his little leap in the end zone that he wishes he would have never done, prior to that reception, we had four passes in a row to four different guys. Mm-hmm. We hit Julio, we hit Marquise Mays, we hit Darius Hanks, and then we hit Kevin Norwood. And I remember saying, oh my gosh, this is what we've been looking for. When I think of multiples, it's like, how many guys can y'all stop? And you and I talked, you talked at the beginning of the year about, man, if we really can develop these other weapons, we can really make it difficult on defenses. I don't think we've made it. As explosive as we were against Tennessee in the third quarter, it was still the Julio show. I don't think we have made defenses have to say, gosh, we got six or seven guys. Who's going to – we haven't really made them just say, how do we prepare for this team yet?
We haven't. We came out in one game and, you know, we were five wide for a possession, and then the next possession came out in a power running formation and you know, two tight ends and the Wildcat. And we've not done that where we have just said we're going to put some cards on the table and they will not reconcile one to the next and you guys have to figure out how to stop it. We've not been that multidimensional, and so hopefully we can see that moving forward. Sticking with the topic of offense, we spent some time in the preseason talking about the need to increase our productivity in the red zone. What have you seen with this team? Do you feel that we've been more productive in the red zone?
I think we have. You know, in looking at the stats and preparing for this podcast, we only had 59 opportunities in the red zone through 14 games last year. We've had 35 opportunities through 8 games. And so we're on pace right now to finish in the high 60s, which would be an improvement from last year. We also are seeing an improvement in the number of scores in the red zone for touchdowns. So we are also translating more of those opportunities in scores versus field goals.
Yeah, I think the number that we looked at was 47% scoring conversion for touchdowns in the red zone last year, and we're at a 68-point touchdown conversion this year. And so that's certainly positive. We're sealing the deal more often than at a higher grade of performance than we did last year.
Now, one thing we are not doing that I talked about at the beginning of the year is I wanted to see more shots, I guess to use the term of big plays and explosive plays, with the weapons that we have on offense, I wanted to see us take more shots from 30, 35 yards out. The only time I think we've done this year, maybe once or twice, but in the Tennessee game in the third quarter, I guess not in the third quarter, in the first quarter where Julio, they said he dropped that ball at the 1 yard line.
Yep.
That was taking a shot. I don't know where we were when we threw the ball, but I really would have liked to see this team more this year at the 30, 35-yard line take shots into the end zone, and we have not seen that.
We haven't attacked the middle of the field and attacked downfield as much as I would like to see us. And so, you know, there again, I think that's an opportunity to improve. Let's move to our next topic, and it's on the other side of the ball. We talked a great deal at the beginning of the season about the front seven, and I'm just going to pitch you the question. We assumed very much through the offseason and going into the season that the front seven on defense would clearly be the strength of the team. Is that true?
No. The strength of this year's defense is the defensive backfield.
Secondary.
I mean, we thought that was going to be the problem, and just like you mentioning the 14 picks to lead the nation right now, We thought we would see the 3-4 as our base defense this year because we had matured in the front seven to allow us to go away from the nickel.
Right.
That has not happened. The 4-2-5 is still the predominant formation that we seem to line up in week in and week out. And we are still not getting consistent pressure from the front four. We are having to manufacture pressure, and the pressure is still coming predominantly from the DBs, from safeties.
Yeah, we have 10 sacks on the season, and I'd venture to say half or better are from the defensive back players.
Well, and we've had injuries. So to be fair, I think Darius and Courtney Upshaw and Dante have all been banged up.
Right.
I remember in the first podcast, I said, how cool would it be to have Darius coming on the left, Upshaw coming on the right, and Dante, you just pick your hole in the middle, because those three guys were not going to all be able to be double teamed. If you had five offensive linemen and you had those three guys and just throw somebody in with them, one of those guys was going to be able to beat their guy man on man. Well, I'm hoping it was injuries, and I'm hoping that this progression of continuing to get healthier, we'll see this at the end of the year. But like you and I talked about before the broadcast, we have not seen any of our guys. If we rush four, they got five linemen. Three of these guys are being covered by one offensive lineman. None of those three guys are beating their man.
Right. Yeah, I agree, and I'm hopeful, too, that that injury is partly the cause. When I look at our starting lineup and you look at a Damian Square, who we don't talk about much, but he's playing pretty well this year, Upshaw, Darius, Chapman across the front, that's a nice group. And so I'm hoping that Darius and Upshaw both been injured, Hightower as well from the linebacker spot. We commented last week that they're moving better coming off injury and seem to each game be moving a little better. So hopefully this bye week, again, it continues to allow them the opportunity to heal, and they come back for this last four-game stretch just like shot out of a cannon. So that's what I'm hoping for there. We had a little fun with our last four topics, and we each picked breakout players. And so on offense, my breakout player was Brad Smelly. And it would appear as if perhaps I chose unwisely. I think he's got two catches on the year. Your breakout player was Darius Hanks. So why don't you crow a little bit about your choice?
You know, we said at the beginning of the podcast or the beginning of the season that we needed the Marquise Mays and the Darius Hanks to take that next step to be able to complement Julio. And I think the numbers bear that out so far. Darius has already, you know, he threw eight games. He's already had 20 catches for 300 yards. He only had 17 catches through 14 games last year.
Yeah.
And so he's definitely had some good games. We haven't gotten him involved in every game like I would like. You know, and I think that's something that the offense needs to work on, just like they were talking in the Tennessee game about get Julio involved early and he's a different guy. Well, I almost wish that we would get Marquise, Darius, and Julio involved at least one pass at the beginning of every game.
Yeah, but he has matched or exceeded his performance from last year, and so I think that's a good choice at a breakout player, and he's executing at that level. On defense, you chose Chris Jordan. How's that turning out for you?
You know, that's not turning out very well. Chris Jordan was one of those players who's been in the defense for a couple years, you know, converted running back out of high school, who I really thought was going to, you know, in the spring he was showing, you know, flashes of he was going to be able to handle some of the play calling. He was going to be a strength in the middle. I know he's been a little banged up, but I'm kind of surprised he's been passed up by, you know, he's been passed up by not only, you know, true freshman C.J. Mosley. I guess C.J. Mosley has leaped over him and Nico Johnson. But I'm surprised that right now he's running third behind those two guys.
Yeah, Chris Jordan was an interesting pick. He's certainly been in the system. You know, Nico was kind of beating him out last year. And then, you know, C.J. Mosley seems to be beating everyone this year. But Chris Jordan's been in the system. I think there's some times where he certainly would have helped us this year. And he's been fighting injuries. So, you know, I'm not calling it a bad pick right now. I give that an incomplete score simply due to injury. I went with Kerry Murphy as my breakout player. And I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed in his performance. I expected a lot more out of him. I know that he demonstrated to me a pretty aggressive motor last year when he played. And that's coming off a situation where he missed most of fall camp because his brother had been, you know, bad situation, but his brother had been killed in Birmingham during, you know, just prior to the season. So coming into this season, I thought that he might have mentally regrouped and ready to come into his own. And I'm just not seeing it this year. He's not giving me what I was expecting.
Well, you know, word out there at the beginning of the season was that he had dropped a couple pounds and that he, you know, we always felt like he had a motor.
I think he picked him back up.
Well, we thought that the move, you know, the whole Nick Gentry thing was because we were going to put him on the outside. And we saw in last week's game where he was in there a lot on the outside. You know, it was interesting. Him and Josh Chapman and Marcell Dareus was in the game a lot last week, which is a new thing. But I definitely thought we would have seen more flashes from him at this point. So I'm a little disappointed in him right now.
Let's spend a little extra time. We know the Tide is doing this, so why don't we as well? We have LSU coming up, and we play them in Baton Rouge. What's your thoughts about the Tigers?
You know, I'm curious what LSU team we're going to see next week. You know, who knows what the situation is with the sprained wrist of, you know, Jarrett Lee. LSU has always played us very tough in every game. I think Jarrett Lee brings them more from a passing standpoint. Jordan Jefferson just doesn't get it done with his arm at all. You know, watching that game when Jarrett Lee went out last week against Auburn, it was, okay, Cam Newton's going to run, then Jordan Jefferson's going to run.
Yeah.
And which team's going to stop the running quarterback? If Jarrett Lee is not able to go and we can contain Jordan Jefferson, you know, as far as contain his running lanes, I think we're in good shape because, I mean, they only threw for 80 yards against Auburn if you take out that one gimmick play.
Right. Yeah, if you take out the running back throwing the pass, then that's exactly right. Not a lot of production from their quarterback position. I think they'll both be ready to go for this game, and at least from a health standpoint. I don't know if they'll be ready to go from a talent and execution standpoint. I think they are what they are in their passing game. We may see a different wrinkle, and it may have to come through another trick play. So I think we're going to have some discipline to not fall prey to the gimmick play. But I think our defense, there's an opportunity here for our defense to come back healthy and really feast on what's really just a very weak LSU offense.
Well, I think that's true. And what I would like to see in this game, and I expect to see in this game, is I expect to see the defense getting off the field more, see more three and outs, let us win the game, the time of possession, and wear out a very good LSU defense. And so hopefully the third, fourth quarter comes around, we're starting to break some runs.
Yeah, that's the point of concern that I have relative to LSU. I'm afraid that their defense could outscore their offense, which that would not bode well for us.
I will be curious to see how LSU decides to play Julio. In the game against Tennessee, they didn't give him the corner help, and there was a lot of man-on-man. There was no safety over the top. And so I'll be curious to see if they just put Patterson out there on an island and say, you've got Julio, and now we're going to worry about the rest of the guys. Because after his performance against Tennessee, you would expect them to give a little more attention to Julio. And so if Greg can get Marquise Mays and Dareus Hanks and Preston Dial involved early in the game, I think that can bode very well.
Yeah, I agree. I look at this game, and I have an opportunity to change my mind because we're 2 weeks out. But I look at this game as a 21-10, 24-14 type ball game, but probably not really being that close on the field. I think there's a point separation, but both defenses play stout. Points are hard to come by, and so you step out to a two-score lead, and it feels bigger than that. What do you think?
I'm going to surprise you a little bit. I think we're going to build off of the momentum that we had in the second half against Tennessee. I think that we are going to turn it on a little bit offensively. I think the defense is going to, you know, we had two picks that we dropped in the Tennessee game. I think Jordan Jefferson is going to be forced into throwing a pick. I think we're going to win like a 34-13 ball game.
Okay.
I think we're going to put this team away in the third quarter.
Well, Tom, that certainly is something to look for, and I hope you're right with the LSU score. I just want to just spend a minute and get your take on this. I just think the stage is really setting up nicely for Alabama to have a chance at the national championship game. Ohio State had the number one ranking for a little bit, and they stumbled. Nebraska was poised to grasp it, and they dropped a game. Oklahoma had it for a week. They dropped a game. This weekend, I think we're going to see Michigan State drop to Iowa. I think we're going to see Missouri drop to Nebraska. We're potentially going to see Oregon drop to USC. That just paves the way. I think we have the opportunity to take care of Auburn. That puts us right back up there with Boise and TCU. You know what I think about those teams. You know, I read an article just today where they assessed that of the balance of the schedule, Alabama has the hardest schedule in the country moving forward. And you could look at that as a negative, but where we are and what we yet need to accomplish, that's a positive. That's an asset. If we take care of what we need to take care of, we're in Glendale.
I agree. And if you're meant to be there, you want to have the toughest schedule of the remaining guys in the top 10 as we go into these last couple of weeks. It will all be up to them. I mean, I agree that if they play their way out and they win the rest of these games, they will bump ahead of a Boise State. You know, I even heard some interesting feedback that, you know, there are people out there that expect a Utah to knock off a TCU, and then maybe a TCU still gets upended later in the year. And so they both knock each other, you know, both of those teams end up faltering. And so you might be left with the only undefeated team being a Boise State. But I think that even if you finish the year with a Boise State Oregon type of undefeated situation and you've handled your business, I think you'll see an Alabama Oregon matchup.
Yeah, I think that would be fantastic. And if you even put in the fact that we may have the opportunity to face South Carolina again and essentially avenge that loss.
That would help us on paper.
That would help us fantastic. We would look almost as an undefeated team because we have an opportunity to avenge a loss that no one else would have. And so, you know, I like your phrasing, if we're meant to be there, the road is paved for us to be there. An Alabama Football Podcast listener, if you're meant to be in Glendale to see the Tide or the other competitors, you need to rush on over to alabamafootballpodcast.com and read the instructions for signing up for how you can win a pair of tickets, free tickets to this year's national championship game in Glendale, Arizona. It's a simple process, and you have the opportunity to win. So we encourage you to do that. And this has been another episode of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn, let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate what you're playing against. And make his ass quit!